You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
We welcome you back. Second hour is live. There's a lot of news out there, and our next guest told us about some of the biggest potential news of the day earlier. Max Olson joining us from The Athletic. Max, thank you very much. I want to get right to your report about the conversations between the Big 12 and the Pac-12. Good afternoon, and tell us all about it.
Yeah, appreciate you having me on, Paul. Great talking with you. This is a moment when in the Big 12, there are no bad ideas right now. They have to explore all options to, try and find a reasonable way to keep their eight remaining members together and give them some financial stability and give them some confidence that they can, retain their status as a Power 5 or Autonomy 5 conference. And so Bob Bowlsby hinted at this on Monday during his appearance at the Texas Senate hearings that essentially before he even starts exploring expansion and some of those moves, he wants to see, is there a partnership option out there to work with a conference, whether that's sort of an alliance on scheduling or a full-on merger or some way of approaching maybe the TV networks with a conference to negotiate a better deal together. They are looking into all options here on what they can do to, give this conference a future. And so, yeah, he flew out to meet with George Klebkoff today and very interested to see sort of where they go from here, if they can kind of get on the same page and see that, hey, there's something here that can mutually benefit both of us, or if this is more of just kind of a preliminary thing and all these commissioners trying to figure out some big, bold move to respond to the SEC.
Max, the easiest thing to do here would just be to laugh this off and say there really aren't any good solutions. I know that's not what we're talking about, though. So as you have been reporting this story and watching it, can you give us the best-case scenario for the Big 12? And secondly, what does the Pac-12 get out of an alliance, a marriage, or even anything beyond a conversation?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think right now the thing that is scaring these remaining Big 12 members is, this year the TV money that was distributed to the members was about $28 million, and they're staring at a future here where, without Texas and Oklahoma on the, whenever they exit, that they're staring at a future where what if that's $14 million? What if it's even less? And so they have to find some way to get back to where they've been and get back to being whole by any means necessary. Otherwise, you're talking about, obviously, as we saw last year, massive budget cuts and layoffs and cutting sports and all that. And so they're going to look into whatever they got to do to try and just try and survive this. And so, yeah, for the Pac-12 side of this, I'm very curious to see, there's been some more speculation, I think, recently about, okay, do they want to get involved with the Big Ten or something like that? I think George Klebkoff seems to be very intrigued by all the options that are kind of presenting themselves to him. And obviously he just started this job on July 1, so it's got to be fascinating for him to try and kind of pull his membership and figure out, obviously he inherited issues from Larry Scott. Now, what's the move you make that sort of fixes some of those and helps you try and keep up in the long run here in terms of that revenue gap with the SEC and the Big Ten?
Max, I'll put you on the spot here, even though you're just a reporter, you're not in charge, but with an alliance between these two conferences, what would be the best case scenario?
Of if they do that?
Yeah, Max, what would the best case scenario be between the Pac-12 and the Big 12? I mean, what's their best option if they had to do something or did do something?
Yeah, certainly I think that it's a question of, okay, can you go to a TV partner like Fox and say, okay, we're worth a lot more together now, and is that where you kind of try to find the value in sort of increasing the revenue distribution that all of these members get. But it's a great question. I mean, because we certainly don't have a ton of history of what scheduling alliances actually do for, you know, does that actually help the champion of the Pac-12 or the Big 12 get closer to a playoff spot? And right now, obviously, that future of the 12-team playoff is kind of in a weird spot right now. But I don't know. I think that's why I think today's meeting is probably more preliminary than anything of, I don't think they're very far down the road on here's what we're going to do to help each other. But these guys both know we've got to figure something out here because the SEC has made the kind of big move that we have to find some way to match.
So let's just forget the Pac-12 for a second and talk about the Big 12. You know, we know a little bit more than we did yesterday based on what Bowlesby testified in Texas. So, you know, beyond some miracle cure for their illness or a magic bullet, you know, they have a depleted league, a marginalized television arrangement. They can kick and scream all they want, or they can decide, you know what, we'll keep Texas and OU in here, although it's hard to imagine how that will benefit them. So give us their outlook. Beyond this meeting today, where do they go other than to just throw in the towel?
Yeah, sure. I think that the belief within the conference is still, and we can certainly argue whether this is the right take on it or not, but the belief within the conference is still, we've got a runway here. We've got time. We have the grant of rights agreement through 2025 that, you know, sort of forces these eight members to stay, because certainly, you know, do those schools have the ability to pay the kind of, you know, potentially $80 million penalty that a school like Texas can afford? No, probably not. So I think they're trying to operate with this belief that, hey, you know, if we stick together as an eight, we have more value together in terms of our next move than any of you do individually if you go to the Pac-12 or the Big Ten, the ACC or SEC. Now, if they splinter, you know, if a member or two leaves and does get a spot in another Power Five league, then yes, they're in a very, very different predicament there. Where is everybody jumping ship then? I don't know. But certainly Bob Bowlesby has acknowledged that, you know, if the league were to dissolve, then Texas and Oklahoma, you know, who are you paying that penalty to, right? I clearly the grant of rights becomes null and void, and then everyone's kind of off on their own. So they're having to explore whatever they can do to kind of keep this together and maintain that unity. But certainly you've got a lot of stressed out folks right now trying to figure out, what is our future, and can we really just sit here till 2025 waiting for an answer?
Max, if you're looking at the league right now, the remaining schools, who would Bowlesby be most concerned about bailing right now?
Well, clearly, as you saw yesterday, you've got the three Texas schools that are talking about, you know, we're going to work together, we're going to protect each other. You know, if there's some move we have to make, then we'll try to make that together. So I think you would look at those three and Oklahoma State perhaps being with them as being maybe your valuable assets that you've got to hold on to there. And that's where you wonder, okay, could the Pac-12 turn around and still just pursue expansion and go after them as opposed to doing a deal with the eight? But I think that's probably a little bit of the concern. You know, you've seen people point to, well, Kansas and Iowa State have that AAU status, and certainly that matters more to the Big Ten and Pac-12 presidents in terms of the prestige that they expect from their membership. But that's the hard thing in all of this, is I don't think that, other than West Virginia, you know, sort of being a natural fit with the ACC, and we'll see if that comes to pass. This is why everybody is kind of like, if something like this could come together, it kind of makes life easier for those eight members, because who knows how easy it actually is to find a destination after 25.
And finally, Max, we know that this year is going to happen regardless of where this next question or answer goes, but how is it possible for Texas and Oklahoma to remain a member for this many years, considering nobody trusts them, nobody likes them? You have to work together through a number of different issues, especially with what we have going on in the country right now with COVID, just for starters. I wonder, you know, who thinks this is really going to work out?
Yeah, it's that is certainly a fascinating piece of this that is going to continue into the fall. Is, I think you would assume that Texas and Oklahoma you know, lawyer up here and certainly want to enter into those sort of divorce talks of, look, you know, we said we'd stay through 25. We all realize that's not a very realistic plan going forward. And you've certainly heard Bowlesby and others talk about how much Texas and Oklahoma and the move they've made have, you know, threatened to destroy the conference and undermine the future and all that. So, yeah, can you really see them, you know, being civil with each other, especially some of the comments made yesterday? Can they really, like, all just work together and pretend to get through it for through 25? I don't think that's the case. Now, I don't know what year they get out, and again, that big penalty comes into play. And I think that's also another part of this that sort of motivates, in a petty way, it sort of motivates these other Big 12 members to stick around a little bit, because I think if Texas and Oklahoma have to write massive checks to get out of the conference, at a time when your financial future is very uncertain, you absolutely need your portion of that check to protect your athletics department.
Max Olson, very complicated issue, talking about the Big 12. Many, many thanks. Great to have you on, Max. We will continue to be in touch. Great reporting today. We are heading to a break right now. More to talk about. We'll talk about the Pac-12, end of that a little bit later on with John Wilner. We will continue with your phone calls as well right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free, no insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
We welcome all of you back here, and Kevin is up next in North Carolina. Hello, Kevin. Good afternoon to you.
Well, hey, Paul, thanks for letting me visit again. I'm out here on the Outer Banks drinking some cheer wine. You ever had cheer wine?
I must say I have not. What is it?
It's a soda. It was developed or originated in Salisbury, North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like a vanilla Coke, if you will, but it's kind of legendary in North Carolina. It's even hard to find in
Carolina. I have been to Salisbury a few times. It's a nice little town.
Yeah, it's okay. The bottom line is it's raining Tar Heels and Wolfpack out here. I should have gone to the mountains.
Yeah,
okay.
It's
unbelievable. It's Forrest Gump sideways rain here, Paul, but it is what it is. I got a good tan, and the place is beautiful. I don't know. You should spend some time out here. But I'm listening to your show here, and I can't believe what I'm hearing. I can't believe, unless the Big 12, the remaining eight, if you will, are going to try to go in unison to the Pac. You know, going 2 hours west to the Pac-12 makes no sense when they can go 1 hour east to the ACC. And I'm not saying all of them, okay? And, oh, by the way, the ACC has this network that produces a lot of money, and you know, and everybody should know by now, the Pac-12 network is a bust. It's as bad as the Longhorn network. Can't get it on any cable systems. So I don't understand what the heck they're doing unless they're talking to everybody in the world, you know. But if I'm four of those Big 12 schools, that would be, well, three of them, that would be Kansas, Oklahoma State, TCU, and Houston, which is not a Big 12, a Big 8, or whatever it's left to be now. Those four schools should go in lockstep to the ACC. And I think ESPN might groove on that. You know, you get obviously the Houston market, the Fort Worth, Dallas market. You get Oklahoma State,
yeah,
which
but let
is
me,
Oklahoma.
Kevin, let me say this about television markets, and they are not as important as they used to be. Now they do matter. When you add a big state, you can. There's still the sub game is still out there, but television is in such a different place than it was 10 years ago when the SEC was trying to add bigger footprints for the very same reason that we're talking about, to try to sell the SEC network to big cable companies and satellite companies. But you know, the world has changed, you know that. I don't really think they have no moves, but tell me, what if the ACC is looking to expand? You know, I get the Texas play, but how much does the ACC really need? Their television contracts are already in cement. Yeah, they could add to them, but are you really going to add significant dollars to your television contract if you add Kansas or Kansas State or Oklahoma State or TCU or Texas Tech? I don't think you are.
No, let me interject, Paul. I didn't say that. I would say Houston because of that. That's the fourth biggest market in the United States. TCU,
which is
obviously, you know, the market they're in.
Let me ask you.
They're a small public school.
Let me ask you this question.
Yeah.
If you're trying to figure out the Houston DMA or whatever the new phrase is, isn't that what they call it, Randy?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. If you're saying in the Houston metro area, who are the most important college football programs? You know, the first two are Texas and Texas A&M.
I'm not even
sure there is a third choice.
Well, I'm looking at a list from those four schools I mentioned. I mean, they should go lockstep to the ACC and say, this is what we got. And the ACC, we could look at it, but ACC will never take West Virginia. Academically, they're bad.
No.
And they won't take because they got no TV sets, obviously. Iowa State's stuck out there. They're in the shadow of the Hawkeyes out there. Kansas State is in trouble. And Baylor has some thorns politically, big time, okay? So they're not going to take those guys.
Hey Kevin, can you imagine Baylor and Chapel Hill at the same table?
No. But, you know, Wake Forest is a Baptist school, and Baylor is a Baptist school. Well, Wake Forest is not anywhere near as conservative as Baylor.
There's a little bit of a difference. You know, nowhere in Wake Forest's history, do I believe, has Ken Starr ever been the president.
No, and obviously Ken Starr lost his job because of all the sexual assaults, and he swept under the carpet, you know, that clown. But, you know, I just think I think that's maybe their best move for those four schools. And maybe, but you know what? You know, I think that some of those schools have ticked off ESPN so bad. Maybe ESPN will say, "Hey, you know, this letter here you sent us. We don't know if we want you guys to come to the ACC network."
I speak for myself here, but what does ESPN need them for?
TV sets in Texas, 25 million people. They're going to get some of those. I mean, not all of those are Texas or Aggie
fans. Let me interject
fans.
Here for a second, Kevin. ESPN,
yes.
I mean, I don't want to be, you know, misinterpreted here, but with Texas and Texas A&M, they can put the chips on the table. They don't need any more. They don't need anybody else.
I agree with you, Paul. But there's not that many plays out there.
I don't think the Big 12 has. I don't think they have a play. I think they're out of luck. I think their best bet is to crawl to somewhere like the AAC or to form a partnership with a league that, because quite frankly, Bob Bowlesby has just been run over in this.
Yes. You know what I think you'd enjoy though, Paul? You ever watch the Netflix Outer Banks series?
I have not yet.
You need to watch that because the scenery is fabulous, okay? And the plot line is pretty good. Now, the first season's much better. I watched the whole second season already. Okay. It gets a little off the rails with craziness, you know, but if you want the scenery, okay? And, oh, by the way, I should have gone to the mountains with this rain. Look at this stuff, man. Okay.
Well, Kevin, I hate to run. It is this part of the country that you're in right now and we're in it suddenly became winter again with a deluge. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check in with Cat Daddy, who is in South Carolina.
Big Paul, you looking good, sounding good. I totally enjoyed that interview with Gene Stallings. You know, I'd love to have seen him and Frank Howard in the same room together.
Oh, man.
It sounds just alike.
I think they would have gotten along quite well.
Yep. Don't tell them Barlow being Alabama. Anyway, here's the question I want to ask you, because all this alignment and stuff set changing, and you know these other companies ain't going to sit back and watch it go down and not do nothing. But what do you think is in the cards for Notre Dame?
I think Notre Dame is sitting on its independence right now and trying to come up with a compelling reason to join the ACC. And that's really their only play. I mean, for all the people that think the Big Ten is a possibility, they don't understand the history between Notre Dame and the Big Ten.
That's very interesting. Well, I can't wait to see how it plays out. Everybody have a great day, and God bless America.
And I want to apologize to the people out in Iowa. I don't know why I continue to forget Iowa State as a member of the Big 12. I always talk about the Texas schools, and I forget the attractive Iowa market. All the television sets in the state of Iowa, both of them. We will take a break. More to come at 855-242-7285. We are not done yet. We have a lot of guests, including Bill Conley. He loves to crunch numbers, and he will join us next.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
We are back. Great to have all of you with us here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill Conley joining us. Always great. He stirs it up. Very controversial, even when he's not trying to be. He's a numbers cruncher. He analyzes things. Bill, good to have you on. How are you going to upset this audience today?
I don't really know. I feel like that from an SEC East standpoint, my preview is up, and it seems pretty straightforward to me. But we find some hornet's nest sometimes.
Well, let's look at it. You looked at the SEC East, which most people just shrug their shoulders and go, I mean, what's there to look at? It's already done, right? What did you find as you crunched the numbers?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy to look at this and see a situation where Florida. It doesn't become a bad team, but takes a step backwards with what they lost offensively, opens the door pretty wide for Georgia to take advantage. It's an interesting race for third place, but there seems like there's this humongous gap between the top two and everybody else, and we'll see exactly how that plays out.
Well, let's start with the dogs. And Georgia fans have always are nervous because of the history. It's been a few years since the last national title. Not to make them uncomfortable here on this early August day, but what could go wrong for the dogs?
Well, I mean, the most straightforward thing is that, you know, we find out that what we saw from JT Daniels last year is only a four-game sample. He torched three pretty iffy defenses and struggled, made some mistakes against the one really good defense he played. It's easy to turn that into a situation where he makes mistakes against a lot of the better teams on the schedule, and they don't really turn the corner offensively that we thought they were late in the 2020 season. So that's... And combine that with the idea of, you know, a pretty remodeled secondary getting hit pretty hard by Clemson in the season opener, that's a pretty straightforward picture of how things could go wrong. I feel good about the offense. I think, you know, there's reason to believe that what we saw late last year is real and sustainable. But, yeah, it's not hard to paint a picture of how things could go awry.
Next up is Florida. And, yeah. If you look at the schedule, Bill, they should have a good season. I mean, the only problem is two of the top four or five teams in the country are on that schedule, Bama at home and in Georgia in its usual place. And, of course, they do go to LSU, which is always tricky, and Missouri. I mean, there's some, you know, in Kentucky. As I said, it looks like a manageable schedule. I'm now eating my words. Yeah. But, I mean, what are your concerns about this club other than what I just got through reading?
Yeah, the schedule should keep the floor pretty high. I mean, you know, yes, they could get knocked off at Missouri or at Kentucky, but you do look at that and you're thinking, you know, the ceiling's probably, or the floor is probably like 8-4, something like that. But they kind of last season hinted at a brighter, at a higher ceiling, at a brighter future. And it does feel like they're in a situation now where the offense almost has no choice but to regress after what they lost. And we don't really know that the defense has the pieces to take a step forward. It was, they couldn't defend the run very well last year. They couldn't leverage opponents into those, you know, obvious pass situations where Grantham could send a house. And if the offense gets worse and the defense doesn't get better, that's a worse team. So it does open the door for Georgia for sure, but you look at the schedule and it's really hard to see anything other than like a 9-3, 10-2 finish, you figure.
Yeah, we had somebody on a couple of weeks ago who didn't even have them in the top 25. That upset everybody. I mean, I asked Dan Mullen about it at Media Day. He didn't really seem to care one way or the other. So after Florida, Bill, the real question is who's next? So who do you have?
Yeah, I feel like Kentucky is the most known quantity. Maybe that gives them an advantage. We know they're kind of what they want to do. They're going to run angry. They're going to be humongous in the trenches. They're going to play pretty good defense, even if they're not as disruptive as they were a couple of years ago. That kind of makes them the safest bet in that regard. But Tennessee, with their absolute, their total volatility here, without knowing anything about the lineup they're going to field, how the coaching change is going to help or hurt, all the new pieces involved there, they're completely unpredictable to me. Like, from a number standpoint, it looks like about a top 50 team. That's fine. But they could easily be the third or seventh best team in this division, and not a whole lot's going to surprise me. So really just depends on how risky you're feeling. If you want the safe bet, maybe that's Kentucky. Maybe you can talk yourself into Missouri. You just want to roll the dice and see what happens, and it sounds like Tennessee's your team.
Yeah, I want to follow up on Tennessee, because if you look at the schedule, and now here I go with the schedule viewing again, it is not a very difficult schedule. Now again, maybe I'm thinking old Tennessee, not current Tennessee. I mean, Pittsburgh's a, you know, not a bad team. I don't want to, you know, knock the Panthers. You know, at Florida doesn't look good, at Missouri, but, you know, winnable games against Bowling Green. I think even Pittsburgh, Tennessee Tech, South Carolina at home, even Ole Miss at home, and then South Alabama and Vanderbilt. I mean, you can cobble together a decent number of wins there to possibly, am I crazy, thinking that they could be, and I can't believe I'm using this phrase because I hate it, become bowl eligible?
Yeah, I mean, I think bowl eligibility is an absolute possibility. I think it basically that schedule can be interpreted in a couple of ways. If they legitimately play at about a top 40 or 50 level, then you're right. I mean, the only definitively losable games are Georgia, Florida, Alabama. Everybody else is beatable, and they could easily, even if they don't win all those games, they could easily get to 7-5 or so. But if they're only like a you know, top 60 team or top 70. They're inconsistent, all the new pieces. They don't play very, you know, consistently week to week. Then Pitt, Missouri, Kentucky, Ole Miss, South Carolina is losable. There are really only about four sure wins on the schedule. So you figure this is a pretty high ceiling, low floor, floor situation.
Yeah, and Bill, you know, you could say the same thing about South Carolina, Tennessee. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are tweener teams. I mean, we really don't have any idea. I mean, I know you have to have an idea because you work for ESPN and are an analyst. I'm just a talking head. But how do you evaluate South Carolina, for example?
Yeah, I mean, so I like the hire. I like that they didn't just go with the hot new defensive coordinator of the day, and they tried to think a little creatively, and creativity doesn't always pay off. But I just look at the roster. That's the South Carolina, there are so few proven entities on the roster right now, and I think that's going to hold them back. They should be better than Vanderbilt, certainly, but it's hard to trust their schedule beyond Eastern Illinois and Vanderbilt. East Carolina, Troy, they're going to head in thinking they can win those games, but East Carolina and Troy are also looking at those games thinking they're going to pull an upset in those. It's hard to see too many win opportunities in conference play, especially just with the newness of it. I think if Beamer pays off, it's going to be a couple years before we really see his vision because the roster is under such transition.
And then we get to Vanderbilt. It's not like they're going to struggle to be better than last year. They were terrible last year. But in looking at Vanderbilt, do you see any hope?
I mean, I think the major hope with Vanderbilt is, you know, you've got East Tennessee and UConn on the schedule. Those are probably you don't have to fear being winless. You should have a couple of wins there by midseason. And anything is going to be a confidence builder situation at that point. You don't see many proven entities, so to speak, on that roster. I like the hire. I like the choices he made, the hires he made, the way he's creatively looking at the program. I think it absolutely makes sense that they're going down that road. But I just don't think they have the roster here. And if they get to 2-10, 3-9, that's, you know, you call that a success in year one.
The SEC East review from our man Bill Connolly. Bill, what else are you working on?
Flipping the page now, we got the West. That'll be the last preview of this entire preview season, and then it's all about the other preview content. We're finally to that point here. We're going to have a whole lot of pieces here coming up in a pretty short amount of time.
Well, don't refuse to take our call when we get to some more meatier issues. Accept call from Feinbaum Show. I don't want to hear a decline. We know it was you.
Oh, yeah, you know my number. I can't escape. I'm ready.
Okay, Bill. Hey, thank you very much. Very docile Bill Connolly joining us, but it will not last, I promise you. We'll take a break. More to come. We will head out west in a little while and find out the Pac-12's reaction to the Big 12 meeting and more of your phone calls right here.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
On a Tuesday, and let's check out Alex in Oklahoma. Hello, Alex.
Hey, Paul. I'm a first-time caller, and I recently started watching the show, and I really enjoy it. I'm a huge OU fan, and realistically, I think we have a great opportunity at winning the national championship this year, but I don't follow any SEC pages or fans on social media. You're the SEC godfather. How do you think SEC fans would react if OU were to win the national championship this year against an SEC team like a Georgia or like an Alabama, knowing OU could very well be in the SEC next year? Did they show us the SEC brotherhood or not?
Yeah, I think they would. The one thing about fans in the SEC, they respect good. And I think they do respect Oklahoma. And I agree with you. To me, Oklahoma has improved its defense significantly. Kirk Herbstreit made that point the other day. And others have as well. And I think they have arguably the best quarterback in the country and one of the best coaches. So, yeah, can they get there? Yeah, I think they have a really good shot at getting to the playoffs. And I'm not going to bore you with a bunch of cliches, but until we see more, it's a little bit difficult to know. But they would definitely be in my top four right now.
Absolutely. Hey, Paul, thank you for taking the call. Hope you have a great day.
I should have said you can't beat Alabama and expect to live. You could. That is verboten. Let's continue with more phone calls here. And Mason is on the air. Hello, Mason. Go right ahead.
Hey, I was going to ask you, what do you think about the ACC going out and getting UCF, West Virginia, and then obviously Notre Dame, and then picking up another team, maybe like Kansas from the Big 12 to try to survive all this realignment?
Remember something, Mason, about addition. When you're adding schools, you have to figure out how to digest them. And you also have to come up with a way to maximize their value. So with the SEC and OU in Texas, that took no thought process at all. That was yes, we'll take you. But of the schools you mentioned, Notre Dame is the obvious. The ACC has been trying to woo Notre Dame for some time. But other than Notre Dame, I want to ask you. You mentioned UCF. You mentioned West Virginia and Kansas. Tell me what any of those three or all of those three bring to the ACC.
Well, I'm thinking if realignment, if everything keeps going like it is and you're building super conferences, that the ACC, if they're to want to survive, they're definitely going to want some bigger teams alongside Clemson and Florida State and even Miami. So I thought UCF seems like they potentially could become a big program. Obviously, they're not yet. Again, Notre Dame is already there. And then with the Big 12 like they are, maybe poach West Virginia, who would be close to the ACC, kind of in that realm, and then maybe Kansas or somebody else near them.
Yeah, Mason, thanks for the call. I don't agree, but I don't think Kansas really brings you anything. Kansas has a great basketball tradition, even though it's been sullied under Bill Self, and nobody out there seems to care. The basketball program is significant. The football program is dead. I mean, it's just flat broke after what Jeff Long did in bringing in Les Miles. I think if you're looking at the Big 12, frankly, if I had to rank the two schools that bring something to the table, it would be Oklahoma State and Iowa State. Not in significantly large ways, but at least – from a competitive standpoint, fan following, but both come from very small states, and the state of Iowa is already cornered to some degree by Iowa. West Virginia, I love the fan base. I think it would be a fascinating place to go to a football or basketball game, but I don't think they match up very well with anyone from an academic standpoint. UCF is interesting. I do think UCF is a sleeping giant. Now, will somebody take a gamble on them right now is the question. The Big 12 should have taken them a couple of years ago. They did not. Let's move along and check out Anthony, who is in Alabama. Hello, Anthony. Go right ahead.
Hey, I've got one real quick question for you.
Okay.
I'm curious about this naming, image, and likeness and the rules, and you're going to know best. Can a school, when a player does an endorsement deal, is that tied to him staying at a particular school, or do they have rules set up to prevent that?
No, these are very interpretive rules sometimes because there a lot of places are different. But ultimately, that is an individual situation. It's not you have to report it to the school. From a compliance standpoint, but there are no other requirements, as best I can tell. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. Let's check out Louie, who is in Arkansas. Hey, Louie.
Hey, Paul. Got a couple of things I want to talk about. First is OU and Texas moving into the SEC. Do you think they're going to break these up into four pods where – then there'd be four pods, and then each pod would play three teams from one of the other pods? Or do you think they're just going to continue with the East and West? And another thing, do you think Texas still deserves to have their own network since they're going to be coming to the SEC?
Okay, the second question is, Texas is not going to continue to have a network. What what is known as a Longhorn network will go away and Texas will move into the SEC network with its other 15 brothers, as hard as that may be the sound. I mean, that's just the way it is. There's no getting around it. And so I answered your second question. What was the first one again?
Well, you think they'll have like four pods?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I got so hung up on the LHN. Yes, I do. I don't think it will remain like it is now. The conventional wisdom, and that's all we have right now. Nobody is doing a lot of talking, including the commissioner when we queried him the other day. But I think the betting favorite right now are the four pods. It just makes the most sense.
Okay, and one more thing on this. When you had the coach on yesterday, I believe it was, and he was talking about the NIL, like where one player would get so much money from some private institution, you know, and he made a good point where, say, if a guard or a tackle who blocks for that particular player and he makes, you know, a touchdown and of course, and it goes on that way where it's the linemen that are actually helping this particular person make these touchdowns or yardage or whatever. How would a coach deal with that as far as trying to say, hey, you know, yeah, he's making money, but you guys, we still got to win games. I mean, I think that's going to cause a little bit of rough.
Louis, you know. You're right. It is going to cause a lot of issues. I don't know how it's going to be dealt with. That is on every coach's mind right now as practice is set to begin. We have a lot more to do. We're only at the halfway point of the program, and we are coming right back.